Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this morning. How you doing, man?
I am doing good. Good lunch today, Stone. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. I love going to the Tide Place. We had a little excitement. I left my phone in the lobby, but with that great big Business Radio X sticker on the back, it was easy to find, and all is well now. So this is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Joanne Corley, and she has a thing or two to offer with regard to creativity and innovation. So that's going to be a fun and informative conversation. But first up, on Atlanta Business Radio, High Velocity Radio, that is, this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a gentleman with Freedom Financial. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Josh Gordy. How are you, man?
Pretty good. I was actually in the fender bender before I came over, but doing pretty good right now.
How exciting.
You got here just in time, and I know, you know, that's part of being an effective football player, right? I'm sorry about the fender bender. Nobody got hurt, though.
Nobody got hurt. Nobody. Yeah. It was in the rest parking lot, so I was actually eating Thai food for lunch as well.
See, that's my world. Yeah. So, Freedom Financial Coaching, what are you doing for folks?
Well, We're helping them plan out goals. That's the main thing, is helping the clients, or I call them players. I like to translate it into football.
They're
my players. I'm their coach. So we like to set out goals for them financially and just help them put together a plan. You know, a lot of times people think they're in distress. And, I mean, I guess they are until they actually have a plan in place. And so that's why I step in as a coach. We have to set realistic, unique budgets for every month, you know, plan out those savings that we're looking to accomplish within the, you know, the 1 year, 3 year mark, you know, as well as saving for kids, college, and eliminating debt, because we know that'll
bite you.
It'll get you these days if you're not careful. So
now, are most of your clients professional athletes? Is that your market, or you're working with everybody?
Yeah, everybody. That's funny. A lot of people do ask me that, you know, and if it came down to it, I mean, obviously with that relationship I have with a lot of the guys, you know, I will be more than willing.
Because the only thing I know about athletes and financial planning is from the show Ballers.
Oh,
is that a documentary? How accurate is that?
Well, just put it like this: you don't see everybody in the show, so it is not quite accurate.
But there are some challenges when you're dealing with professional athletes, right?
Definitely. You know, for one, you're young, and a lot of people asking me, you know, how can they blow all that money? I'd be like, you know what? I dare you to be 22 years old and somebody give you a $600,000 guaranteed salary. I mean, I want to see what you'll do with it.
Right.
And so it's definitely some need for it out there, even professional level, or, you know, even if you're making $80,000 a year,
right,
if you don't know how to manage it, it'll end up getting away from you.
So don't you find yourself sometimes in this capacity consulting to couples, like married? So, I mean, you must be like part therapist, right? I'm trying to envision you in our living room, my wife and I, and I think we've got a pretty good handle on it now. But early in our marriage, I mean, I'll confess to you, we didn't see eye to eye on the way to manage money. I don't think we communicated well about it. And I'm trying to envision you in the living room with us. I mean, you would have had to been part therapist to help us.
Exactly. And just so you know, that the number one cause for divorce is money problems and money
fights.
Is that
right?
That's correct. But back to your point of, you know, being part therapist, with personal finance, it's only 20% head knowledge and 80% behavior. So it's very much so we are dealing with behavioral changes day in and day out. You know, you can tell someone how to work the numbers, show them like this is the plan, but if they're not willing to change their mindset, you know, then we're kind of just spinning our wheels. So, and that's where, like I said before, setting those goals out, that'll help change your behavior sometimes.
Now, how did you get into financial coaching?
Well, so it started, I guess, during my time in the NFL. As we all know, it's a good time to make a good living. So we all have a lot of resources that we can.
It's a lot of money in a really short period of time compared to the vast majority of us, right?
Yeah. Exactly right. And, you know, we got to learn how to be, you know, great stewards of that money that we receive. And so we have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of advisors come to us all the time.
Like through the NFL?
Yeah, you have to be certified through an NFL system. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we get a lot of advisors come and want you to invest their money. And not all advisors are bad, don't get me wrong.
But is that something like every day somebody's...
I wouldn't say every day. Not like every day.
Regularly?
Regularly.
Are they annoying you? A little bit?
It's a target-rich environment, right?
I mean... Yeah. Yeah, because if you think about it, advisors get, how do they get paid, right? They get paid off of commission. Right. So,
and they know we're a bunch of, there's 53 people at least in that room that all make a decent amount of money.
There you go. So, but I had one guy who, his name is Eric Smith. He's the financial literacy coach. That's his title. Maybe he's listening. But he came to me on a different level. And it was more so of the coaching level, which is what I'm doing now. You know, he really wanted to make sure that I had a foundation in place, that I had a plan for the money I was making, had enough to put aside, you know, for later on. And even like these times now that I'm a free agent, the planning that I did then helps me get through this time now. And at the same time, helps me figure out what it is I want to do maybe in my second career. So this is what I'm here doing now. And it really touched me in a certain way. I thought, man, this is something that the average person could use. Like, it's not even, I always say I want to help people when I was done, just to know how to do it. And this is a way you can help people in every aspect of their life, because as we know, finances touch every aspect of your life.
Right.
Well, and like you touched on earlier in the conversation, this idea of the time value of money, if you can catch them young, you can help them, even to the extent, with or without the really good money that I'm sure you made for a short period of time, you could go teach kindergarten or work at the local hardware store. And if you decide to follow some disciplines, you can really set yourself up for a very comfortable, predictable, financially stable future. Am I right?
That is very much true. It's very much true. You see it all the time, too. I listen to Dave Ramsey's show, you know. So
I'm big on the envelopes. We have you see what I do for a living,
right?
But my wife has a real job and makes a pretty comfortable living, and we have this Ziploc pouch in a kitchen drawer, and it has the gas envelope, the haircut envelope, the grocery envelope, we believe in that 100%.
It's powerful, man. It's powerful. But
so you get it. You think NFL players can have envelopes?
I do.
Good for you. Yes.
I have them. I don't see why not.
His envelope's probably a little thicker than mine, but it doesn't matter. We have our envelopes.
You got it set aside. You know, if I know I have it to spend, then there's no guilt in spending it. Mm-hmm. I know I've already put aside college funding, so I can go out and go shopping and enjoy it without thinking, should I be doing this? Should I not? You know, it gives you freedom.
Are the people of higher net worth, are they... Does that resonate with them?
It does. It does. That was one thing I was nervous about coming in. Like, how would I, you know, talk with the single mom who's making 30 compared to the couple that's, you know, doctors making 300,000? But, you know, the same similarities, they're parallel.
It's, really?
They so just when have, you're they swept the mortgage too, right? It's just bigger.
Just a bigger mortgage.
Yeah. They both like to shop or they both like to eat out. It's the same. But one just have obviously a couple more zeros on the end of the income than the other. So, but it's
so the problems are the same and the challenges are the same. Doesn't matter really how much money, because you'll find a way to spend whatever you got.
You will. Definitely will.
So now, can you share a little bit about that initial conversation when you're talking to people? What does that conversation look like? Do you really have to understand, okay, what is the things that you're kind of spending a lot of money? Like, you have to kind of get the lay of the land of what their situation is, right?
Yeah. When I first meet with a client or my players, and I just
players,
keep saying
sorry.
That, my player.
I like that. I'm a player.
Yeah. And actually, I hope she's listening. I just got the phone with a lady. I was walking in. I told her, you know what? I'm about to go on the radio. So, you know, tune in. And so I'm calling you back when I get off the show. So be ready. But, you know, you first want to let them let you know what the situation is.
Is it usually they have something that they're worried about, or?
Oh yeah. that's more than likely what it is. So tell me a little bit more about the situation, mm-hmm. and that's how you get it flowing.
And so it'll be like, oh, I got kids in college, or I want to buy a house, or
right. I'm 55 years old. I barely have any retirement savings now. Right now, you know, I know I'm late. I know I'm starting late, but how can we, you know, how can we get on track? And from there, okay, so this seems to be your goals. Now, what do you think is going to be the best situation? You know, try to let them answer it sometimes at first, mm-hmm. but then you lay out suggestions and we go from there. Yep.
And then when you make these suggestions, do you help them execute? Let's say one of the recommendations is to buy some stock or to put some money in a 401. Do you get them connected with people to help them with
once,
that?
Once it gets time to start investing. But at first, we want to clean up your foundation first. It usually, more than likely, always goes back to, are we on a budget? Are you making that monthly budget every month? It seems, you know, budget is sometimes a bad word, you know, but I try to let them know that, hey, a budget is not, it should not be restrictive. If anything, like you said about envelopes, it gives you freedom.
It liberates you, right?
It liberates
you. But it's counterintuitive because at first you might feel like if you haven't done it, it feels like it might be confining or restrictive. You talked about debt, and that really is a bear. Can you speak a little bit more to that and maybe just some good practical strategies for attacking mm-hmm. debt if you have it?
So the stat I brought in here with me was, you know, the consumer debt now is up to $11
trillion. Wow.
With a T.
With starting a T. to become real money.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. So that's for one, should be eye-opening to a lot of people. And I mean, if you can find a way to get out of debt, it truly liberates you, like I was saying. But the process we use is, first off, making that budget, you know, squeezing every dollar out of it as we can, finding, hey, can I cut back here in this area? Can I cut back in that area? Even if it's just starting out $200 extra a month. Now we're going to attack that lowest debt that we have. It's the same Ramsey's process. We're going to use his debt snowball method.
I want to ask you about that because really my wife Holly and I have really bought into that whole idea. And mm-hmm. and one of the precepts there is don't get all twisted about interest rates and all that stuff. And I can tell you, at least for us, emotionally, mm-hmm. it was more powerful and more empowering to knock out that $2,000 debt, even though maybe its interest rate was a little lower than the $6,000. Has that been your experience and your client's experience as well?
Yeah, most definitely. It goes back to what I was saying about it's more behavior than it is head knowledge. Yeah. So once you can get that quick win, you know, we're in a society of quick wins, right? So if I can pay off that $800 debt first, like, hey, okay, that felt good. Now let me use the money I was using on that smallest debt, plus any extra money I can squeeze out of the budget, any extra money I can get from garage selling. or Uber driving. Well, thank you, Uber, for that plug right there.
Yeah, well, that's great because now we can send them an invoice. All right, let me ask you this. Do you feel like there's any wisdom, no matter what level you're at? Like we said, we're all just, you know, broke or not at a different level. Is there some wisdom, though, in setting aside a little bit to just have a little fun and relax, even if that envelope's kind of thin, but just cut yourself a little slack and don't tighten it everything down all the way down. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought it up because when we're going through the process, setting everybody up, that's one thing I do stress a lot. Is that especially if I see they got a big number. If they got a big number like $200,000 they're working on, that's a big
rock. It's gonna be a while before we get this knocked out.
Exactly. And so to keep them motivated, it's like, you know, let's set a goal. Once you pay out $2,000, okay, next month let's budget to go to your favorite steakhouse, you know, and celebrate that as a win. That rejuvenates you again. Okay, now next time let's knock out 3,000 and set another win. You know, I mean, set another goal, something to do. So that makes a big difference as we're going through the process. A whole lot of difference.
Now, since you did, you played at a high level, sports at a high level, and NFL on a high level. Do you use any of the coaching you've gotten there? Does that come into play when you're kind of coaching the people's finances?
Yeah. A lot of times I'll use a lot of the motivational, you know, quotes that we had around the locker room and things of that nature. And just the process, like I was saying. So my clients are, I refer to them as players. There you go. And even the plan that we put together, you know, that's our playbook.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's our playbook to financial to winning with money. And within the playbook, you have your plays. You have your game plan.
Nice.
You know, you have your scouting report.
You have a season. Because I think in sports, having a season is helpful because you're working towards a goal.
Yeah.
And then if you don't make it, you kind of reboot. You get to try again. Fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I consider the season as being the time that we're together. So it's usually around a year and a half.
But I like it, though, because then you can fumble and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, knucklehead, you fumbled. Let's learn from that. Oh, don't do that again.
I appreciate that. I'm going to write that down.
But there's no, and I think that helps the lay person, which, you know, what, 99.9, your clients are lay people when it comes to managing money. That's why they need your help.
Yeah.
I think it's helpful to have that that common nomenclature, that third version of a language that you can use.
And I'm also going to implement another part of it, too, on Facebook, maybe do a private closed group and call it the locker room.
There you go.
You know, so all my clients will be able to talk within that private group, encourage everybody, share some wins. Or share some negative things. You know, what are you struggling with right now? And somebody else can encourage them, because you're going to need a lot of encouragement throughout it. And I mean,
because there's going to be setbacks.
It's going to be setbacks. Exactly. Life is going to happen.
Yeah, right. The refrigerator is going to go out right in the middle of your debt snowball thing, right? The refrigerator is going to quit.
But you know what? We're going to have our emergency fund in place.
But that's an important thing, though. Yeah, knowing ahead of time there's going to be setbacks, then you can kind of plan for it. So it doesn't surprise you, like it's the first time this has occurred, right?
Go. Yes, yep. Having that plan in place.
All right, so the whole sales and marketing thing in this world, because I'm getting the idea that this need is so great that it's probably pretty competitive, right? So how do you get to have this type of conversation with a prospective client? Or are you just so wired in the football community that you don't... How do you get into selling this stuff?
Right, yeah. Well, one great resource is obviously through Dave's website as a Dave Ramsey.
I'm also in Dave Ramsey, Bill.
Yeah. Really? That's the one.
Dave, we love you, but you owe us.
Anyway, so we're on a referral system through there. And so people actually get referred to
us. All right,
so
you're endorsed as one of these local or coaches, kind of. So Dave has blessed you.
Yeah, it's a blessing.
Did you meet Dave?
Yeah, I met him before.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't remember it.
But you do.
Yeah.
Is he a good guy?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
I mean, he's a good guy on the radio.
Yeah. All right, but business comes through that, because like me, I might, if I would have said, okay, show me somebody in the Atlanta area, because Holly and I are ready to get some help, you might have popped up, and so we might have reached out to you.
Are you the only Dave Ramsey person here in Atlanta?
No, it's about 12 of us, I think.
He's the best one.
And so
the only one with a Super Bowl ring.
Exactly.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, we all pop up on a screen, and basically we got to reach out to the clients.
Uh-huh.
I think that'll change in the future, because some people was complaining about that. I think they're going to let them choose from now, but in the future.
Right.
But that's one way, and that's just a small part of it. The main thing, actually, most of the clients come from meeting them face-to-face.
Right, I'll bet.
You know, out networking, going to small business meetings, just anywhere. Anybody's a client at any time.
When you're talking about my money, I mean, you're talking about emotional behavior. There's a lot of emotional dynamics that I may be tied in with another person. That other person might be my nephew because he got his Series 7 or something.
Right, right.
I mean, you're dealing with a lot of dynamics here.
Oh, yeah. That's a big barrier you got to get through. You know, when you're talking about people's money, man, they'd rather give you that newborn baby than open a checkbook. Man, that's one thing I'm finding out, but... You know, once you become comfortable with the player, they really open up and you can be real, real productive.
So now how does the relationship work? Is it a fee per service, or they kind of, like you said, they work with you for a year and a half, and how do they pay for your services?
Well, so it's fee only, by appointment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started out with a flat fee approach, but I was finding that once you get to different sides of the income spectrum, it weighs a little heavier on some people, obviously, than others. So just listen to another coach, actually, on our coaching call.
Dave Ramsey coaching call?
Yeah. He was sharing best practices. Yeah. And what he did, it was went to a percentage of the gross income monthly per meeting. And so that's now where I think I'm going to land at. So 2% of the gross monthly income per meeting. And you know, that'll keep it, you know, in a good range.
Well, and you work it into your budget, right? I mean, you add that in the budget just there like you do the grocery stuff. But this fee-only approach, what I think I like about it, but I want to validate my assumption here, is that allows you to very clearly remain objective in recommendations for some ideas, as opposed to, you know, you're getting this kickback's probably a little strong, but commission or whatever.
Right? It does put the clients at ease that knowing that, you know, just, I mean, knowing that you're free base only, you know, that you have their best interests, you know, at heart. So,
right. And a 2% investment, I mean, that seems practical and reasonable.
If you look at over the time, I mean, you're going to, the amount you pay compared to the amount you're going to eliminating debt or build up in your savings is going to be very minimal.
And you're giving them kind of the roadmap for the future.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, this goal setting and having an endpoint in mind, I think, is very meaningful. Do you have a go-to percentage or discipline on setting aside money before it even kind of makes it into your budget, like that first sweep of savings or in your 401? I realize it's probably different in every case, but is there kind of, I don't know, kind of some go-to rules of thumb that a person might use if they were to follow your counsel on that?
Right. So the very first line item is going to be whether or not you're tithing or giving. You know, that's going to be your first line.
Okay.
And that's up to you.
But that's the first thing is the tithing, the giving. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, from there we get into savings. Now, if you're out of debt, then we're going to, you know, recommend, you know, you're saving 15% of your income to retirement, you know. Hit it strong.
And that adds up. All kidding. I mean, I don't, if you are fixing air conditioners, of course, I don't know. Oh, my air conditioner friends make a lot of money, but even if you have a regular job, you start setting, it adds up, right? It
adds up quick. Not quick, but over the years, you start, you can, it's all about being consistent and, you know, consistent over time.
Right.
You know, and with that compound interest working for you, you'd be a millionaire before you know it.
Well, no, you really will. Even on a, that's what I think maybe some people. Okay, I interrupted you, but no, you're talking about 15%.
Yep.
So yeah, go ahead.
And then also into the emergency fund, once we get to a fully funded one, we would like to see 3 to 6 months expenses in your emergency fund as well. And that emergency fund, man, a lot of people, you know, they talk about it, but you don't realize the sense of, you know, liberation you have when you have that in your back pocket. Like, you know, I can, you know, I'm riding down the road, my transmission fall out the car. Okay,
right.
Yeah, whatever. I can go write the check for it and, you know, be on my merry way. So that gives you another level of peace of mind, I should say.
That's what I think you're getting for your 2%.
That's right.
Peace of mind.
Peace of mind.
So I noticed when you sat down and got settled, I thought I caught a glimpse of a Dave Ramsey book. Do you have any designs on writing one or more books at some point in your career?
You know what? I always think about that and always think about which approach should I come with it. Hey, I guess somebody's listening. I will write it if somebody's willing to help me with it. But man, I do think, you know, I have a lot that I could share with people from, you know, just my upbringing, small town here in Georgia, going from not even being the star athlete in high school. I mean, midway my senior year, I was just playing special teams, and just by pure, I don't know if we call it luck, but God's will, you know. But then you don't want to put this on nobody, but it was an injury that happened, and it was a window of opportunity for me to get out on the field. And 6 games left in my senior year, something clicked, and hey, it earned me a scholarship to Central Michigan University as a scholarship athlete, obviously, 4-year starter. Ended up being a 4-year starter at Central Michigan. Not to get too far into the story, but...
Well, no, I think it's important backdrop because I think it's almost certainly part of what has made you the person you are and gives you the resiliency and the desire to give someone else a hand up. And all. So I think it's important backdrop.
Exactly. And another point, too, I do, like now, I call it my therapy. I do love to go speak to, you know, young groups around the city, visit a few high schools, you know, every week, just talking to those kids, man, letting them know that it's not about where you start, you know, it's about where you finish. And once you do see that little glimmer of opportunity, of hope, you know, you just got to take it. You got to seize it. You know, it'll be there for a little bit, and next thing you know, it's gone. And you'll be looking back like, woulda, coulda, shoulda. Because I can remember exactly that day when my coach was like, hey, do you want to play safety? You know, safety's hurt. I can remember saying, like, I was a little nervous. I'm not allowed to say it. I was like, I never played that position. I don't know.
What position? But you were playing special teams?
I was at the time. Yep. And so just think about it. If I wouldn't have.
If you said no,
I'm like, I don't know.
Right. Then you
man,
would,
that split whole, second decision.
Your whole life would have been in a different.
Different direction.
Right?
Different direction.
You might have been a radio host.
I always told I had a good face for radio.
So you got into Central Michigan and you had a career there, and yep. Then you went to the NFL and you were undrafted though.
Yeah. And
so what was that like? Did you expect to make it in the NFL? Because a lot of high school kids in college, you know, it's less and less people who get to go to that next level.
Exactly.
I mean, now you're the best of the best of the best.
Exactly.
So did you think you were going to be drafted? What was your expectation?
Well, and going back to that same opportunity piece again, coming out of Central, we had two star players on our team. You guys know one of them, Antonio Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And the quarterback at the time, Dan LeFevre. Great guys, man. Antonio, one of the hardest working guys I've ever seen. Some people say it, but, you know, I've witnessed that firsthand. We went at it all the time.
Oh, right. You were a defensive back.
Yeah. iron sharpened iron, man, every day. But no, it was a chance, you know, for our pro day. And we brought out 22 teams of scouts. That's big. I don't know how much you guys know about pro days or whatever, but to bring 22 scouts to a MAC school, Central Michigan, that's big. And so, you know, I was like, hey, here's another
time
opportunity.
To shine, right?
You know, so and everybody knew it. They was there to see those guys mainly. But we all got to work out.
So the whole team, all the seniors got to go, or the people that declared?
If you wanted to, yeah. Some guys, believe it or not,
they said no.
Nah, I didn't want to do it. I was like, I don't know if I can do it. And one of my other teammates.
Does that surprise you, or that? Just...
It does. It does, man. I'm like, you just never know, like,
right?
Man, you just go ahead and just do it,
right?
It's wow. An hour. This can be your biggest job interview ever. And one of my other teammates, Frank Zumbo, he's playing for the Kansas City Chiefs right now. I can remember him telling me, like, at one point, because I had already started training, he was like, nah, I don't think I'm going to do it. And I was like, man. Because
the fear of failure.
I guess so. Like,
wow.
And in the position he was playing at the time, and he compared himself to the guys in the NFL, yeah, you know, it was somewhat of a, I guess, difference in size, I should say. But I was like, man, I don't know. Maybe you should try it. And, you know, oh my God,
right.
Yeah. No,
wow.
And he's still going.
See, what a good advisory.
Yeah,
what a good
really.
Coach you are, man.
You really? You're a good advisor.
Now, 2% of that, forget it. You're business now.
You should send him a bill.
Right. But he actually ended up trimming down and moved to another position.
Uh-huh.
And so he's flourished in that position. So that man,
right,
that
was, because an NFL team, I mean, tenacity, persistence, doing all that stuff, that matters.
Yeah,
you know,
the,
there's coaches
the more you can
that
do.
Right. The coaches kind of fall in love with that personality type, yep. And they see that guy's he wants to play. He wants to be here. He loves the sport.
Right.
That
right,
can get
right.
you somewhere. Right.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And like I said, the more you can do, you know, I'm a DB. Well, this is what a lot of DBs have to do. We play DB. I played corner. I played nickel. I knew the safety spot. I had to play on kickoff
right.
return.
Special
punt.
Team. Sure.
Especially, man, the more you can do, you know, so that was big. And I guess in the pro day, that when I took advantage of the opportunity, came out and ran a 4.38. So
right there, you got their
there
attention.
You go. That raised them. Raised some antennas. So that that helped me out a tad bit.
And then that helped you in your career. So you played for several teams, and
right.
then you got a level of success right away, right, as a rookie.
Yep. So I went into Jacksonville undrafted, you know, and I was released during training camp week 3 of the preseason. It was tough.
Do you have an agent as undrafted free agent?
Yeah. So funny story about that, man. I had to go find my own agent.
Right.
You know, because a lot of guys, they have agents coming to them, want to sign them, right? I didn't have that.
Central Michigan agent pipeline wasn't working for
wasn't,
you.
wasn't quite ticking. But my brother played with a guy at Georgia Tech, Ronnie Mabra, here in Atlanta. He's like, yeah, I think my old teammate is trying to get into agency, you know, sports agency. So I was like, man, I got nothing to lose.
Right.
And so I was his first client, you
uh-huh.
know. And,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, and I kind of spoiled him right off the bat, you know, going out and getting the Super Bowl rookie year. But yeah, was released from Jacksonville, went home. I was sent home, you know, I was cut and released.
So what's that like? So you made it through training camp, or you didn't get out of training camp?
Technically made it through training camp. Didn't get out of preseason. Because technically training camp has ended when the preseason games start. But yeah, it was tough.
It's brutal. I mean, I watch Hard Knocks, and that's just brutal.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
So that took the wind out of your sails, I was, at least for a little bit.
Because you think you made it.
Yeah.
You made the 53. That's like the goal, right?
Yeah, and all the time during camp, you may be counting numbers, like, okay, I think I'm here. And they tell you not to do that, which you shouldn't. Looking back, like, you shouldn't worry yourself with that. But as a young guy, a lot of times you can't help that. And, but yeah, like I said, I was sent home. I was home for 3 weeks, and that was...
Long 3 weeks, huh?
Long 3 weeks. I was... But, you know, I've always been a guy. If something happens, I'm looking to the next thing. I had already got my internship set up. I was going to go into cardiac rehab for my internship and finish that, and so I could finish my degree. But was in Atlanta for a weekend, just visiting some friends. Had a duffel bag with a couple pair of boxers in it, a couple pair of t-shirts, and I got a call from Green Bay, like, hey, can you get on a plane at 4 o'clock?
And yes, sir.
Yeah. Yes, I believe I can do that.
Yeah. Didn't have time to drive back to home. Well,
because you put stuff on tape. I mean, right?
Yeah.
That's what they're, that's
from
what they're.
Preseason. Mm-hmm. And so, went up to Green Bay, worked out, and, you know.
And you were on the 53 roster of Green Bay?
Week 10, I was activated to 53.
Wow.
First 10 weeks.
Just in the time. Just in time.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a great run, man. It was.
I'm really impressed with you, Lee, that you know these phrases like the 53.
I watch a lot of TV.
Yeah, I can see that.
Do you know how many make the practice squad?
8 or 10.
So it used to be 8, now it's 10. Man, pretty good.
So if somebody went to get a hold of you, website?
Website is freedomfinancialcoaching.com. On Facebook as well, facebook.com/CoachGordy. And that'll be the main ways to get in touch with me.
And if somebody lost a cornerback, they can call you too. You're still available for that as
still
well, right?
Yeah, so anybody who's out there who knows any GMs, any owners, you have a 5'10", 194-pound cornerback who can play corner, nickel, safety, special teams.
Look, I'm a big Dolphin fan, and our DBs are terrible.
You'd love for him to head down to Miami at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Right. Yeah, so just I'll be sitting on my phone, so I'll be waiting on the call.
All right.
Well, I am so glad that you came down to visit with us today. Thanks, man.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Yeah, keep up the good work. Hey, can you hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, man, I wouldn't have it any other way.
All right, next up. On the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, we have with us, with the human sphere, Miss Joanne Corley. How are you?
I am great and completely fired up after that last interview. Oh, my God.
I think what everybody...
What a great story.
What everybody wants to know is how fast you run the 40.
Well, 4.38.
Well, I know that's you, but I want to know Joanne.
Okay. Can I at least say I was a college athlete, played volleyball.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah. Works.
So can you share a little bit about the human sphere? What are you doing for folks?
Yeah, we help businesses manage their talent and in a way that they can get better business outcomes. We try to connect behavior to money. That's
behavior. That seems to be the theme.
Yeah,
of the
really.
Day.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm so inspired by that. Yeah.
So now, where do you see the disconnect?
The disconnect is I think a lot of business owners and leaders don't understand that behavior does equal money. They say people, but they don't see behavior.
But they say people are their most important asset.
They say that. There's a lot of lip service in my industry, let me tell you.
So are you saying that's not necessarily accurate?
Yeah. People say it, but, saying it is different than believing it, understanding it, and then acting on it.
So how did you fall into this line of work? Have you always been doing this kind of thing?
Well, I'm a former HR person. So I started out in benefits and insurance. You know, my trajectory and career was... You know, it's kind of a bit of a story, but it was an insurance. And insurance, it segued me into benefits, and that segued me into recruiting and into HR and then talent management.
So you achieved some escape velocity, recovered from that world, and now you're doing this. Sounds like
a lot of segueing. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It is never, when you're working with human behavior, it is never boring. Yeah, never boring.
So who exactly is the... is the primary client? Is it executives inside firms? Is it individual entrepreneurs? Is it people even not in the business sector? Or where's the sweet spot for you?
The sweet spot really are middle market companies that may not have a very developed human resource department where we can come in and do triage. We just sometimes triage because either a middle manager or an executive is what we call derailing, and they're not doing well, they're not performing well, or a team is not. So we'll come in and help them get on track so that they're executing certain outcomes for business strategy so that they can basically make more money.
So they'll call you and go, hey, Joanne, fix Bill?
It kind of is that, yes. I might not be able to fix Bill, but I may help Bill.
Do you ever find out that it's not Bill that's the problem, it's the guy that called you to fix Bill?
That's very common.
So you got to be able to do that.
Yeah, you know, you're in a workshop and you're training middle managers in a seminar, and all they're saying is, my boss should be in this class, you know, and they're the ones that hired me to actually do the workshop. So, yeah, it's very, very common.
So now, in a company, how do you know, like, if they're kind of reached a plateau and if there's something that you can do to kind of jumpstart?
Well, we can come in and we have a scoping session. We say, okay, what are your outcomes? What do you want to accomplish? And then what are your pain points? Mm-hmm. And without
do they know? Like, can they go, oh, yeah, our pain points are blah,
they
blah, blah.
Can sort of do it, but then I help articulate it. You know, so they say, you know, it commonly is, what's very common in businesses, I've got a troubled employee. I've got a bully manager. Send them to a training, you know, and they think that a one-day workshop is going to fix their behavior. We call that the spray and pray method of training, or, you know, throw up, you know, Italian style, throw up against the wall and hope it sticks. And all they're trying to do really is get the person to get away so they can have a break for them for a day. Really, is really what's trying to happen. And then, you know, can you imagine doing a workshop that's called How to Deal with Difficult People? And all the people that are sent to it are the difficult people.
That must be so much fun for you.
So I say, okay, like from the very beginning, you don't have to stay. You know? But then you have to kind of, you know, win them over. So, in the beginning, you're in there because there's usually a person, and then you find out it's really the company culture or it's a team. Really there's more work that needs to be done, but that's the entree, you know, is usually a pain point. Back to the point of how do they know it? In our industry, a lot of things want to be solved very quickly through a seminar or workshop, and that typically does not work. You can learn something. There's a distinction between learning and changing behavior. Changing behavior takes time, as our previous guest knows.
Yeah. So do you tell them that before they give you the check, or do you get the check and then say,
get paid
just
first.
FYI, this thing is not an overnight deal here.
Yeah. Because we I call it doing truth. If you don't do truth, nothing will change. So we're very candid right up front, and we say, if these are the outcomes you really want, then you're going to have to make the investment. Then we also really help them tie the return on investment. So they really are getting
ROI is an important part when you're kind of selling this in?
Yeah, very, very important. Yeah. Because they got to see it's an investment, and they also have to see how, I call it, you know, employees have either profitable behaviors or unprofitable. Every behavior either is adding to your bottom line or taking away from it. That's really very true. But most people don't see it that way.
Well, I want to dive into this a little bit because it's my impression that this has always been one of the real challenges in marketing professional services, particularly in the training consulting arena, is giving people a practical method for predicting return on investment and then documenting it. So if you don't mind, I'd like to dive into it a little bit. Is one of the variables the cost of turnover? Is that one that you might, in the fact that you might be able to reduce that turnover, is that one of the variables you might put into an ROI calculation?
Yeah, that's actually one. He'll give you a couple of very simple examples. Okay. So if you have a disruptive manager and they're having a hard time keeping people, so that's totally a retention issue. And you can calculate the cost of someone leaving, the cost of hiring, the cost of ramping up. It takes an average of 6 to 8 months for someone to wrap up to full productivity. So if you take their hourly wage, you know, whether they're paid salary or not, but you break that down to an hourly, you can tell how much it's going to cost, like say, recruiting costs.
So you can put numbers to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what I think we've come to learn over the years, and maybe you've known this all along, I didn't quit XYZ company. I quit Joe.
Yes, and that is...
Right?
Yes. Number one reason, multiple surveys from HR folks, number one reason why people leave their jobs is they leave their boss. We say, when I was in recruiting, we said people don't leave jobs, they leave bosses. Mm-hmm. And people will stay proven over and over again in surveys, people will stay for less wages if they have a fabulous boss. And they will use what we call discretionary motivation to actually give more and be more engaged if they have a fabulous boss and a fabulous company culture.
So now, in today's climate, there's the level of productivity. Everybody's working a lot and they're doing 50 million things because there's, you know, layoffs and stuff, and you got to do the three people's jobs that used to have jobs before you got there. Is there a way to kind of train some creativity and innovation in the mix to add that element to kind of somebody's job portfolio?
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the reasons why I do creative and critical thinking workshops and also wrote the book Brain on Fire is because there's such a disconnect between creativity and its need in the marketplace for, you know, company success, for our economy to grow. I mean, even from a broader U.S., let's keep the U.S. competitive, there's a huge disconnect because people just really have a confusion about what is creativity. So if I go into, I've done creativity workshops all over North America for 15 years, and I'll go in and I'll say, the first thing I ask is, okay, how many of you believe that you're honestly creative? And in general, now this is over 15 years, thousands of people, an average of only one quarter of the room will raise their hand at one time.
Wow.
Huh. Now, think about that in terms of impact.
That's terrible. Good. We had a guest a week or so ago. His name was Chip Bell.
Yeah.
He's an author. He wrote a book about this. He said that I don't know if he said it on the air or out there, in first grade, if they ask a kid, are you an artist? Who's the artist? The whole class raises their hand, right? Yeah. Everybody's an artist. Right. In fifth grade, like one kid raised their hand.
Yeah.
So somewhere,
yeah,
it's just like society or something's telling them they're not an artist anymore.
Right. In fact, it's interesting. That was actually experienced by a guy named Gordon McKenzie. He was a 30-year artist at Hallmark Greeting Cards. Mm-hmm. And he would go around to the Kansas City school systems and teach sculpture. And that's what he documents in his book, mm-hmm. that by the time they got to high school, they had absolutely no interest, didn't believe it, were very peer influenced. But, you know, when you go into a kindergarten or first grade classroom and you can say, I'm so creative and want to build a sculpture, it's like, ooh,
right, everybody's lining up.
They're jumping up and down, right, they've got all this energy, you know.
Isn't that terrible, though? Yeah. I mean, how do you foster that? Or is it too late when you're an adult and you've already spent your whole, you know, kind of teen years thinking you're not creative?
Well, you know, that's the exciting thing about the work that I do. It never gets boring because everything that we possessed as kids is still in our subconscious. So, you know, when I go in, you know, so
that's
I ask the first...
scary.
Oh, no, yeah. It's scary and interesting at the same time, right? So, you know, my follow-up question to how many of you believe that you're honestly creative... By the way, one of the rare times that almost everybody raised their hand was when I was in Seattle and most of the people in the room were from Microsoft. So, okay, there you have it.
So they're doing something with their culture.
So then the follow-up question is this. How many of you were kids? That's the second question. And like the room is silent and then everybody says, they start laughing and I say, okay, I want to see a show of hands. Like, you know, woohoo, first grade, how many of you were kids? So I said, the price of admission today is, the question is not whether you are or are not creative. The question is, what have you done with your creativity since you've been a kid? If you were a kid, you are creative, period. And then I have them go through all these exercises, tapping into the things that they did in pretend play as a kid. And they all use their imagination.
Right.
And Disney calls it Imagineering. So basically what we're trying to do in this corporate world is take all that cool stuff that they have in their subconscious that's laid dormant, you know, as a kid, and bring it into their conscious and use it to solve problems today in the business arena.
But doesn't some companies, they just want the person to do the task. Just do the task.
Yeah, yeah.
And that just sucks the life out of them,
it
right?
It totally does. And here's the thing. If you want, you know, our big thing in HR today is employee engagement. You know, we always have these like phrases. That's the new buzzword for
engagement.
A while. Employee engagement. So, you know, what's interesting is if you build a culture of innovative thinking or critical thinking, they're all crossovers, problem solving, process improvement, that's all related around creative thinking. So if you want someone to be engaged, if you want them to process improve, they're going to have to know how to think creatively to learn how to think critically in order to be able to do that. Or else there's so much talent left laying on the table that business owners are not tapping because they don't know how.
So even at level one of this, as a manager of a small business myself, I think it'd be great if I could get better and better at helping people cultivate those behaviors and creating conditions and environment and all that. But at level one, if there are just some things I could do to quit stifling creativity, just get out of the way. Are there a few things that I can do just to, you know, do no harm?
Yes.
Yeah, speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really great one because at its granular level, you'll be in a meeting and you'll have a manager say, let's come up with ideas. And then this is classic. People start coming up with ideas, and what do managers say?
No, that's bad.
Yeah. Oh, that won't work. Oh, no, we've done that
before.
But
some people self-select that and go, look, Bob's the idea person, not me.
Well, great point. Yeah, because there's a disconnect with the creative, creativity. Right. Only certain people are creative, or it's only associated with the arts.
Right.
Or you have that one artsy-fartsy person in your group who dresses weird when they come into work, and you'll delegate all the creative stuff to them.
Yeah, that's Ryan here.
Yeah, he looks real artsy-fartsy. Yeah, right.
So I'm holding the book, Brain on Fire, that you wrote. And as I understand, this is not your first rodeo. It's not the first book that you published. But this one, I think we can validate here on the air, Lee, because it has a specific example in it on page 50 from NASCAR. I think this is the real deal.
Okay, there you go.
Just think about drafting. So you're always looking for good analogies.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But apparently, Junior Johnson was very innovative and creative, always looking for that extra edge. But you use that as an example in some of your work.
Yeah,
right?
I do. Actually, I'm a closet NASCAR fan. I have my significant other to thank for that. It's a very funny, online dating story, which I won't get into now. But anyway, midlife dating. But anyway. I found a great guy now, so shout out. But the thing is that we are creative every single day, and we don't even know it. Mm-hmm. When you are trying to figure out, moms and dads, how to get your kids to school, how to do this, how to do that, how to shortcut something, how to get here quicker because you had a fender bender. We are literally problem solving and being creative every single day, but we don't realize it. We don't say it's that. Because that's the disconnect in understanding creative thinking and what natural role it actually plays in our life on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, don't you love what Josh did with his stuff? I mean, he took a lot of key principles and he laid on top of this whole football, I don't know what you call it, metaphor, allegory, analogy.
Yeah. Metaphor, yeah, it's brilliant.
I mean, that's marvelous.
Yeah, and then the closed face group with the locker room.
The locker room,
that is highly creative, by the way. I'm like, my brain's just like going on, my brain's on fire from all these ideas.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very,
But I think that as a society, we have kind of downplayed art and artists. Like you can see in the schools are getting rid of art. And I think that we should elevate it. And I think that everybody should consider themselves an artist in the work that they do. Because, right. I mean, I don't want to keep picking on Josh, but even in sports, there's some art to covering somebody, right? There's an art to it. You're processing a lot of information and you have to be in the right position and you have to anticipate and you have to read, the quarterback, the receiver, tendencies, you have to do film work. That's an art.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Right?
That's actually creative thinking. That's problem solving. That's creative and
critical
thinking.
And it's in split second under pressure with 80,000 people looking at you.
And
you
the cool part, now that we're on the metaphor of football, the cool part is that from his experience on every play, his subconscious is feeding information.
Oh, it's logging that.
Yeah, that's enhancing your decision making on a split second when you're doing a play.
Right.
Or you're trying to cover a player. So would you ever think that creative thinking is associated with being on the field and being a defensive back? Well, yes, there's a lot of it, but people don't realize it because they don't understand creativity or creative and innovative and critical thinking. But it's going on all the time.
Right. And that's why I think that by eliminating the arts in elementary and middle school and high school is doing such a disservice to us as a country.
Oh, it totally is because you don't. And this is what's interesting. We're educators, right? And yet we don't understand how the brain works. If you're not training your kids to be whole brain thinkers, then, and this is the challenge in corporate America, is the critical thinking. Kids do, if you're spending all day, there's some level of creativity or strategic thinking in video games. In general, being able to use your whole brain to problem solve is typically not used in some video games. So back in the day, I'm going to date myself here. Back in your day. No, back in my day. when your mom said, go out and play, that was the best thing that our moms could have said to us. And I'd say, I'm bored. And she'd say, entertain yourself. Mm. Well, with all that, you have to conjure up things from your imagination. When we were kids, we do this exercise in the workshop. What are things you did in play as a kid? You love the boxes and you like the sheets and You know, it was imaginary friends. Of course, then I say, you know, how many of you still have imaginary friends? That's another workshop. But it's all those things you did as a kid that were part of play. You made up things. Cowboys and Indians, you know, making mud pies, you know, what you do with sticks and bricks. That's all really activating your imagination to its fullest degree.
All right, everybody in the room here, including our producer, heads are nodding up and down. We're all resonating with what you're saying. And I'm trying to envision putting this in a three-ring binder or on an iPad or whatever, walking into the seventh floor of the exec's office and trying to have this consultative, I don't know, sales conversation and getting them to buy into the business value of it. I mean, maybe it's not a challenge for you. I would think I would find that a challenge selling this, I don't know, two-day workshop or whatever.
Yeah. So what we do is we try not to sell it. We try to have them experience it.
Okay.
So instead of a sales call, it's actually a half hour to an hour actually experience of their own disconnect from creativity, their own self-editing. And and if they experience their own self-editing, that they even shut themselves down, then all of that, because I believe creative thinking is a gateway to talent, that it unlocks things in you that can come out and you unlock your potential. So if they experience themselves shutting themselves down or self-editing with these exercises that we do, which by the way are so much fun, who would rather not have a traditional sales call and rather play with crayons and blank paper for like half an hour?
Exactly.
You know, roll with me here, bud, roll with me, you know? And they're like, okay, we're gonna use this crayon. And yet they come out of it thinking, wow, I've got some ahas. And because I got these ahas, this is gonna mean X, Y, Z. XYZ potentially for my company, then that's going to make a difference. So the great thing is that, you know, what's great about being in this arena, you don't have to be traditional. You could be as quirky and crazy as, and just excuse it. You know, I want to dress funky today. Well, it's part of my, part of my brand. I get to,
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah.
So now if somebody wants to learn more, engage in a meaningful conversation, website for you?
Is www.thehumansphere.com or my name, Joanne Corley. You can find me there as well.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio and invigorating.
Thank you.
I mean, I have more energy at the end of the broadcast than I did at the beginning of the broadcast.
And we learned that there's creativity in NASCAR and football. That alone is a success.
That's a win.
And we're all going to commit to not shutting ourselves down, right?
Yeah.
All right. Where can folks get their hands on this book? Is the best way to get on Brain on Fire or any of the other books?
Yeah, Amazon. I've got an actual author link, but just Brain on Fire, Unleashing Your Creative Superpowers. You can get that on Amazon.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. This has been a lot of fun. What a marvelous way to spend a Wednesday afternoon, huh?
Good stuff.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our fearless producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, our guest this afternoon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the Fast Lane.